NXT, AEW, NXT, AEW. Oh, yeah. Oh, baby. We are hot off the heels of the Tuesday Night Wars. Damn, makes me feel like I'm back in the Monday Night Wars era or something. The competition is fierce, but which one? Was it AEW? Was it NXT? Came out on top. Who had the better show? Well, who better to answer that question than the one true villain himself, Marty Scurll, right here on Chilling with the Villain. And joining me, as always, he is the king of the tables. He is Mr. Samuel Scott. Sam, normally I'm making you watch classic wrestling. This week we're doing something a little bit different. This week we're bringing it all the way to 2023 because I made you watch both shows this week, or should I say last week now, NXT and AEW. How are you feeling having watched some current wrestling?
I've never watched NXT in my life, and I've only watched AEW around yours when I come over and you're already watching it. So this was basically uncharted territory for me. As the podcast, it's uncharted territory because this is the we're doing something contemporary. For me personally, uncharted territory. So this is just craziness.
Well, I know we promised to be a classic wrestling review podcast, but I figured this was just very topical. It felt like a big week in wrestling, AEW, NXT going up against each other. I mean, I'll explain in a little bit why this was such a big deal, but I figured, if, you know, these podcasts, these episodes, they're timeless. So if people will listen to this in 10, 20 years, this will be classic wrestling, right?
There we go. That's very, very well thought out. We have a really long-term plan here at Chilling with the Villain.
We do. Well, so Sam, I don't know if you know too much the backstory behind this whole Tuesday Night War, but I guess it started that, so AEW is typically on Wednesday nights, you know that, and NXT is on Tuesdays. Previously, when AEW started, I want to say WWE put NXT on Wednesday nights as well. So for the first year or two, they were going against each other, NXT and AEW. And typically, I think AEW won every single week. I think they won every one, but maybe one. And I guess WWE's argument was, well, it's a developmental brand, you know, like, you know, well done, you beat our developmental brand. But at the same time, they also would suggest that it was a third brand. So kind of a bit of a debate what NXT was. More so recent sort of months or years, NXT is really kind of hammered home that it is a developmental brand. And like I said, it's on Tuesdays, but for this week, or last week, should I say, AEW got moved to Tuesday night. I'm guessing there's some American sport on that we have no idea about. So that happened. And because of this, I guess WWE knew that AEW was advertising Adam Copeland, aka Edge's first match on AEW. So WWE decided to kind of stack their lineup. And I want to say they kind of announced different wrestlers. They kind of staggered it. So at first it was like, oh, there's going to be Oscar there. And then it was Paul Heyman's going to be there. Then it was Cody Rhodes is going to be there. Then it was John Cena's going to be there. Then the one that just popped me huge was, oh, we've added The Undertaker. Like, what? Undertaker,
they announced these up front, are you saying?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're really, you know, throwing everything to try and beat this AEW show. And then after that, after they announced Undertaker, they also announced that the first 30 minutes of the show was going to be commercial free, which is huge because obviously that's when you lose viewers. Do you know what I mean? Like when I used to watch Raw and Nitro at the same time, as soon as the commercial came on Raw, I would flip over to WCW and, you know, they would try their hardest to get me hooked on WCW. So, NXT announced that, and then AEW to retaliate to that said, okay, our first half an hour is going to be commercial free as well. And not only that, but we're doing a buy-in, which they typically only do for pay-per-views, like a 1 hour or a 30-minute buy-in before Dynamite starts with a match live on YouTube, Minoru Suzuki versus Eddie Kingston. So they're all throwing things. Oh, and of course, T TK turned the Dynamite into Title Tuesday. So I guess promised and promoted a bunch of title matches. So both companies throwing everything to try and win this war. People, you know, debate if there's a war going on. I think you can say what you want for all year round, but for this particular Tuesday, it definitely was a war between AEW and NXT. And you know what? I don't need to say this because it's kind of cliche, but the competition is everything. You know, competition makes wrestling better. It makes it more exciting. It makes both companies better. So I think this is actually a really exciting time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, for sure. I am very excited to hear what you have to say about both of these, because you watch both, right? I'd say you lean to, you watch AEW more.
I have more friends at AEW, so I try to catch up with AEW. There's too much of it for me to watch everything. And sometimes,
I understand. Yeah.
Sometimes I'll miss a month or two, but then I'll normally try and catch up. But I'm always seeing what happens on social media. NXT, I don't typically watch regularly. Like, I never really watch NXT. I'll only, if there's an NXT pay-per-view, I'll check out the pay-per-view. I mean, I have some friends in NXT, so there's people I like to keep up with, but with social media these days, you just kind of
don't really need to. Yeah.
Just watch a clip on Instagram and be like, oh, I know what's going on.
That's interesting. Cause I thought you were like deeply familiar with both. So you're familiar with one, maybe not so much the other. I'm not familiar with really either. So this is going to be really fascinating.
Well, I know you don't typically watch AEW or NXT, but have you watched the new Iron Claw trailer, the movie about the Von Erich family? I think you've seen it, right?
The trailer, yeah. So that came out, I think, on Wednesday they dropped the trailer, and I watched it when it first arrived. I don't know. Yeah, we talked to, actually, yes, because we both mentioned it when it on WhatsApp when it arrived, but we saved it for this pod, so we haven't said anything. All we know is that we've both watched it. Do you want to go? I want to go first.
You go first.
I'm really excited. Zac Efron's freakish face is starting to make sense now. Maybe he's just like, he wanted to grow out his physique to match his head so he didn't look like a little pencil neck. But no, all jokes aside, it looks really good. But knowing their story, I think this is coming out, when is it coming out? 22nd of November or like almost like into the holidays?
No, December, right before Christmas, I believe.
Yeah, this is not going to be a feel, like it looks really good. But then I thought, hang on a minute, I know the story. This is not going to be a festive feel-good movie. This is going to make you pretty glum over the holidays, especially when Kerry, like he hops on his motorcycle and you just then, like that's when it hit me. I was like, up until the trailer, I was like, oh, this is cool, this is cool, this is cool. Then you see him, I'm like, oh, wait, this is a true story. So I think it's going to be really good. And what's really cool is I can't think of a mainstream, if you want to call A24 and these kind of movies mainstream, a mainstream wrestling movie since The Wrestler.
Right, yeah. No, you're probably right. I mean,
so I'm super excited.
Yeah, no, so obviously, you know, the Von Erichs and the Texas Wrestling Territory, like this is right down my alley. Like
I know. Yeah.
And I love Zac Efron. So like you can imagine.
Like this movie was made for you. Did you produce this? I'm gonna look at the credits again. Did you make this for yourself?
Can I be honest with you?
I hope you can. Otherwise, this is gonna be the worst conceit for a podcast ever.
So I'm so excited for this movie, and I've been excited ever since they announced it. I was excited to see the trailer. I watched the trailer. I'm going to be honest, I wasn't blown away by the trailer.
Okay.
It doesn't make me think that the film's not going to be good. I think it will be really good. I didn't think it was a very great trailer. It didn't really get me hooked into the whole movie. Like, I felt like we needed to see maybe some more of that. Like, we know the Von Erich story, but the general person probably doesn't. And I felt like we need to see some more of that tragedy, like, in the trailer. I just, for whatever reason, it didn't, I don't know. There's a few clips of them wrestling and that was, you know, him driving around. The trailer I didn't think was, it didn't blow me away. Let me put it that way.
Okay. That's really interesting. Now, I actually don't know the Von Erich story as well as you, which is probably no surprise. I know what happened to the Von Erichs, but like the dad character, like the hard ass dad character.
Von,
That's new to me. So I actually did get what you were missing because I didn't have that information going like ahead of watching the trailer.
I just said
maybe this is just
sorry, I just said Von. I meant Fritz Von Erich.
Okay, well, maybe he's Von to his friends.
I call him Von.
Oh, you're in. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, dearie me. Big Von.
I think for sure that this is Efron trying to get his Oscar.
Yeah.
Like the actors have to do these kind of heartbreaking tragedy.
Heartbreaking, transformative. Yes. Yeah, exactly. But so, we're still definitely going to watch it, right?
Oh, 100%. Sure.
Like, the trailer hasn't put you off.
No, it's not put me off at all, because I'm pretty convinced it's going to be a good movie. I just, like I said, I wasn't blown away by the trailer. So that was that. Another thing I wanted to bring up, Sam. Last week, we did the top 5 imposter wrestlers.
Mm. Yeah, that was really fun. Yeah,
it was fun.
Really good. Yeah.
And there's one that I thought about in my head, but for whatever reason, I didn't put on my list. And it's been bothering me the whole entire week since. So I just wanted to bring it up. I don't know if you remember a wrestler called Brad Armstrong. Do you know who that is?
No. Is he an Armstrong? He is one. Okay.
Right. So Brad Armstrong was Road Dogg's, Jesse James's brother. Yes.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, in WCW, Vince Russo didn't think that Brad Armstrong had any personality. So he gave Brad Armstrong essentially Road Dogg's gimmick. And I have a match. You can watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Where Brad Armstrong, he comes out doing this buzzkill gimmick, right? And it's basically, it's the same as the Road Dogg. He's got the dreadlocks and everything else, but he essentially comes out to the New Age Outlaws music and he's acting like the Road Dogg. It's really, really odd. And I don't think the fans understood or even realized that Brad Armstrong was Road Dogg's brother. But yeah, buzzkill, Brad Armstrong, dreadlocks like Road Dogg, Jesse James, kind of dressed up like him, but comes out to the New Age Outlaws music, slightly sort of changed for WCW. And it's just a really, really bizarre piece of wrestling history, which I think everyone has forgot. But I still remember because I'm a massive wrestling geek. So
wouldn't that be so demeaning to be told to come out as your more successful brother?
Yeah, well, when I was doing my research, I found this Brad Armstrong shoot interview, and he's sort of saying, you know, I was a better wrestler. Road Dogg was a better sports entertainer. And they kept asking me, oh, can you be more like your brother? Can you be more like your brother? To the point where they just gave it him his brother's gimmick, essentially. I was a lot less successful doing it than the New Age Outlaws or Road Dogg, for that matter.
Who was that Hart who kept jumping out to intervene from the crowd during Canadian Stampede?
I think that was Bruce Hart.
Bruce Hart. Okay. So if someone said, hey, can you just masquerade as your more successful brother? I said, isn't that demeaning? Bruce Hart would probably be like, yeah, I can do that. I'm down. Yeah. I'll take anything.
I think he would love it.
He'd love it, wouldn't he? That's fascinating. I never knew that. That's so... Oh, man. And the name Buzzkill.
I don't think that's the worst name.
You know what a buzzkill is.
Well, I know what a buzzkill is, but I still don't think it's that bad a name.
Well, you're being one now by disagreeing with me.
No, you're being one. And for a heel, I think that's kind of cool, like Buzzkill. Like I don't know, especially in WCW in the later years, all the fans are like there for a party, Nitro party, and he comes out, I'm Buzzkill. I'm here to kill your buzz. Stop partying. Fine. Stop chanting. I think that's kind of funny.
All right.
You love cheap beats, so you should be all over
this. Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right. So, shall we reach into the mailbag real quick?
Yeah, I know we had a lot of questions this week. How many of them were, when are you going to AEW? Literally, we get half the questions and we just have to put them all to a side. If you want me to answer that, listen to our Q&A episode, please.
Yeah, so guys, 90% of the questions used to be, when are you going to AEW? And then we made the plea on the Q&A episode we answered it, to not have that question again. So now that's only 70% of our questions that come through. So good job, guys. We're definitely making progress. So I always do the mailbag. I get the questions. So Marty gives, like, his and for the first time on the pod. And something happened where I had to just say, hey, Marty, can you just grab a couple of questions? And he's like, yeah, sure. This is like the first time we've done this. And then he gave them to me. And I look at the first question, okay? And this is what it is. Are you ready? You know which one it is, don't you now?
Go on.
Jeremiah Reynolds, 23. Is fashion outside the ring important to you? You always have some dope styles.
What's wrong with that?
You go, these two are ones I think are good. And it's like, you're so dope. You're so stylish. Oh, you picked that one, did you?
No, there was loads. Dude, there was loads of ones like that.
Oh, you can. All right. That's.
There was loads of like, what about this one? No question. Just wanted to say you're my favorite indie wrestler from The Outsider. The Outsider. There's loads of questions like that.
Oh, good to know you had some backups just in case we had time for more questions.
I just wanted to talk about fashion. So sorry.
What All was right. His, talk what was, about fashion.
What
Jeremiah.
Was his name again? Jeremiah.
Jeremiah Reynolds, 23.
I'm going to say Reynolds. So Reynolds, when I'm working out or doing this podcast or hanging out at home with Winston, I'm dressed like a slob. Like right now I'm wearing a Five Below t-shirt and a pair of gym shorts and pretty much same thing for the gym. So then it's not very important to me. But if I'm out and about, and especially if I'm on the road wrestling, for me, it's always important to at least look presentable. Because I've had it before when I've decided to run to the supermarket to get milk and I'm dressed terribly and my hair is a mess and everything else. And that's the time someone will go, the villain, Marty Scurll. I'm like, oh boy, I look, can I get a picture? I'm like, ugh, damn. I can't say no, but I'm like, God, I look terrible. So typically I always try to dress nice, and that doesn't mean wearing a suit or anything else. It's just being presentable. So like traveling, obviously you can't dress super smart when you travel. It's not very comfortable. So I still want to wear comfortable clothes, but still look like a someone. And I did like that question because I do get quite a lot of compliments on my style. I think it's because I'm European. And dude, it's one of those things where so many wrestlers just dress like trash, I find. Like, and I know that's not their game. It's not their the business right. they're in. But I'm like, if you're trying to present yourself as larger than life and like a superstar, you've got to look the part. And that's like my biggest gripe when I watch modern wrestling and I see a wrestler coming out for a promo and they're wearing like jogging bottoms or just like a t-shirt or whatever it might be. Like, you can wear a t-shirt and jean shorts if you're John Cena and you're that over and you're that jacked. That's cool. But like, if someone small like me, you've got to have all the help you can get. So you better look the part. But no, I've always had slight interest in not necessarily fashion, but just looking presentable and looking the part. So I really appreciate that question. Yeah.
Cool. Not all wrestlers look schlubby though. So maybe that could be a top five one day.
Oh, that would be a good
That'd be a good five. One, right?
Yeah, there's some people that come to mind right away, but maybe I should keep let's, that for our top
yeah,
five.
Yeah, let's keep that. Yeah. Cool. All right, fair enough. We'll let you have that one. Mm. Y2 Garcia.
Y2 Garcia.
She's Y2 like Garcia. She's our back.
Our most devoted listener. She's a diehard Chilling with the Villain fan. So what's up, Y2 Garcia? Thank you so much once again.
She asks, so last time she asked, when are we going to have, or are we going to have Flip on the show?
Mm.
But now she asks, but who would you like to have as a guest? Which kind of implies that we don't want Flip. We really do. But like, who else?
Who would I like on the show? Steve Blackman, of course.
Mate.
Steve Blackman, any of the Mean Street Posse, I would really love to have on the show.
What an answer. Really cool. Yes.
I mean, dude, there's so many people I'd like to have on the show. The one person I think everyone would want to interview or have on a show would be Vince McMahon. I think we'd probably have quite a good week that week if we had Vince McMahon on the show, right? Quite a few downloads for that. I mean, there's loads. You know, obviously, guys like I love and look up to, like Bret the Hitman Hart and Rey Mysterio, but yeah, someone like Steve Blackman, Ken Shamrock would be another cool one. How do I put this? It doesn't really matter who I want to see on the show. It's who you people want to see on the show. So you make your suggestions and let us know, because I might really badly want to interview Mean Street Posse, but if you people don't care about them, then we're not going to do it, obviously. I'll just do it in my private time. I'll tell them that I'm recording, but I wouldn't even put it out there. I'll just keep it for myself.
Yep, the red light's on. Okay, go. And then we're not even recording. We're just hanging out.
What about you, Sam? Ask you the same question.
Mate, Mean Street Posse is a great answer. But yeah, so we've always talked, it's no secret, Steve Blackman, Ken Shamrock, Mark Merrow. Mean Street Posse is a great answer. Mm-hmm. I really love those guys. Dan Severn.
Yeah, Dan Severn.
Would be pretty cool. Yeah.
I met him in a restaurant once.
Yeah, you mentioned.
Oh, he did? Oh, okay.
Oh, I didn't mean to. Sorry. Now who's being a buzzkill? Sorry. Carry on. So rude of me. Oh, man. All right.
Well, Sam, you might have killed my buzz, but you know what always gets me in a really great mood? Do you know what always makes me feel like dancing? Do you know what always helps me relax? You know what helps me party? It's listening to an old school record, an old school LP. I'll even put CDs on. I'll put tape cassettes on, if you can remember what they are. And do you know what? That reminds me, our new sponsor of Chilling with the Villain, Finders Keepers Records, has all of this. Hundreds, thousands of used LPs, 45s, 12-inch singles, CDs, turntables, speakers, receivers, all at Finders Keepers Records. Yes, he's no longer in the La Quinta. Finders Keepers Records now is operating out of a secret location. Whilst they're getting their new store, their new location in Old Town Indio, which opens in November. Oh, the time is ticking down. So if that all sounds good to you, if you're looking to add records to your collection, visit Finders Keepers Records on Instagram. I believe it's Finders_Keepers_Records on Instagram. Hit them up, send them a DM, and make an appointment at their secret temporary location and go in there and just find that hidden treasure chest, that gem of a record that you've been trying to find for years. I'm looking for the classic Japanese wrestling records, and some of them are really, really hard to find. And that's actually how I got hooked up with Finders Keepers Records. He found the records that I couldn't find anywhere in the whole entire world. But now you, yes, you, the listeners of Chilling with the Villain, can find all your dreams in Finders Keepers Records. So this is super duper exciting for us. I will say this. Finders Keepers Records, they have the best prices in the whole entire valley. So it's really, really worth you checking them out. It's a great sponsor of the show. Go over to the Instagram and hit up Finders Keepers Records. And you know what? I'm so excited about our new sponsor. And it got me thinking about my favorite music, not just my favorite music, but my favorite wrestling entrance music. So I thought, Sam, this would be a really good way to tie this together. Why not, for our top five this week, we do our top five favorite wrestling entrance musics. And why not? Why don't we have Finders Keepers Records on the show as well and get him to give us his top five entrance wrestling music? What do you say, Sam?
Mate, let's do it.
Okay. So here we are. Top five time. And today is a very special top five. As previously discussed, today we're doing top five entrance musics. And I can't think of a better way to go through the best wrestling entrance music of all time, the top five, than with our new official sponsor, Finders Keepers Records. We're going along with the whole music theme. You see, you get it? Very clever. Huh? We're tying this in very well. Finders Keepers Records, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me aboard for this episode. I sincerely appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you so much for sponsoring Chilling with the Villain. We very much appreciate it. So, top five wrestling entrance musics. Now, this for me was a pretty difficult list. Typically, when we're doing the top five, it's normally something very kind of specific. This is like entrance music. There's so many amazing entrance song. So I decided to not think about this list very much, because if I did, I feel like I'd be there all day, all week. Do you know what I mean? Like working out. So I just pretty much did the first songs that came to my head. They're probably not the best entrance musics of all time, but it's my list. And these are just the favorites, ones that maybe I like to listen to, or I don't know, have a special place in my heart. So coming in at number five, The Wolf Pack is back, cause of mass destruction. Going for the Wolf Pack. NWO, baby. Wolf Pack. I mean, the NWO is another banger entrance song as well. But for me, Wolf Pack, I don't know, just so cool. You know how much of a big fan I am of Big Kev and Big Scott Hall. So coming in at number four, it's Triple H. Which one? My Time. The Triple H and China version, I guess. 1, 2. Is this on? Remember that one?
Yeah.
Love that entrance theme. Triple H had so many good entrance musics, but I just always loved the Triple H My Time. And the song was actually on the WWF album number 4, I want to say.
Yeah.
When that came out, I think I was around 10 years old. And there's a part in this song where it just goes, My Time, My Time, My Time. And as a 10-year-old, I just like to pretend that it was saying Martin instead. Martin, Martin, Martin. So that always has a special place in my heart. Number 3, Real American Hulk Hogan. It's got to be, right? You can't talk about best entrance musics without Real American. I mean, Rick, you two may have.
Rick Derringer. Rick Derringer. Oh, yeah.
Rick Derringer. But that song's just iconic. It just gets everyone pumped up. What's funny about it is I don't think it was even originally made for Hogan. I remember other people using it. Yeah, I think other...
Derringer was a pop staple. He was a pop staple in the mid to late 70s. And it's my understanding that that album, that was a track on an album that came out way before. And Hogan was in a band, wasn't he? He played bass in a rock bar band.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the bass player for Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
Number 2, D-Generation X. Are you ready? Boom, boom. Scott, again, this one, I love the Run DMC version. I love the X-Pac version, but the X song, dude, it's my childhood, just gets me pumped up. Just, you know, I didn't need to say anything more about it. Like, everyone loves the DX entrance theme. And when I was a kid, I convinced myself that it was done by Rage Against the Machine, when it obviously wasn't.
Me too. But
I always thought it was Rage Against the Machine. That's funny. We all thought that. My number one, maybe not the most popular choice, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because it just came back. But I'm going for The Rock. If You Smell What The Rock Is Cooking. And special mention to the Hollywood version when he came back in 2003. I just loved that whole deal. But that guitar solo that goes into it just, gets me just so pumped up. And just the start of the song is just so perfect. As soon as you hear it, you know, If You Smell, like, crowd just comes unglued. I don't know if people talk about his theme as much as maybe these other ones, but I don't know. For me, it's just the perfect entrance music. So that was my top 5. You can like it or lump it. What are you saying?
I said number 5, and I can show you here. I'll send it to you. Somewhat brown nosing, The Villain. That's you were number 5.
There we go.
Because like I said, the criteria for me was it's got to be part of the whole package. And the only time I got to see you live was when you were doing New Japan Pro Wrestling in Long Beach. And like I said, the only two people, you were part of an 8-man tag, the only two people they gave entrances to were Tanahashi and you.
So, oh, really?
I think so. I think it was you and, or was it you and, it was you and Naito. You and Naito. Mm. That was it.
It surprises me because a lot of the times New Japan wouldn't give me my entrance music. They'd make me come out to Bullet Club music or someone else's. And I'm like, guys, like, because in Japan, they look at junior heavyweights as like less stars than heavyweights. And I'm like, guys, you don't realize that, like, you know, well, it sounds like I'm blowing smoke on my own ass. I'm like, I'm one of the biggest stars in America. Like, I've got like the, you know, the whole crowd is wearing my t-shirt. Like, my entrance is like the biggest part of my act. Can you not just give me my entrance, please? Like, cut the match if you like. Just give me the entrance.
Okay.
I like it.
Thank you. Thank you. Number 4, since you have to be right next to each other, since you two are forever linked, it's the new Zack Sabre Jr. theme song. The band is called Mass Lines, and the tune is called Young Punks, and it's fantastic.
He's using it,
I think, as his NJPW solo theme, but every time he's been on AEW, that's the music he's come out with as well. All right, number 3 is a classic, because, again, I looked forward to graduating high school just so I could hear Pomp and Circumstance by Elgar, which was a bunch of high school kids in their red robes doing the Macho Man for an hour and a half during graduation ceremony.
Of course.
It was guys dropping elbows. It was guys doing the cream of the crop promo. And this was before the internet. You know, I graduated in 89. So it's not the graduation song. That's Macho's song, period.
For sure.
Number two, and this is, I think, is going to surprise some people. Again, going back to my my old days, watching as a child. Marty, do you remember Outback Jack?
I remember Outback Jack. I don't think I remember his music.
Tie Me Kangaroo Down.
Oh, I know that song.
We know that.
There you go. But the theme still sticks with me. And then the number one, what Hulk Hogan did when he was a part of the NWO was he took Jimi Hendrix's Voodoo Child, which was already a song that was moody and sinister, and he took that song and he made it his own. The fact that Bischoff went out, spent the money, got that song, and then almost two-thirds of the friggin' song was Hogan's entrance. He made that song somehow even more badass. That song established what an entrance music should establish.
All right then, Sam, we're going to save the best to last. What you got for us?
All right, I don't have an honorable mention this week. My actual number five, and this really greatly bothers me that you've done this as well, but it's Marty, right? And that bothers me so much.
Yeah.
But listen to this. You don't, like, how do I put this? Like, no offense, Marty, it's not something I'd, like, listen to, right, when I'm walking around, but you cannot doubt its efficacy, right? So from doing what it's supposed to do, it has to be up there. It has to be on the list. Job done. Number four, I have Rob Van Dam, One of a Kind, okay?
Interesting.
Hold on. The one of a kind or Pantera's Walk?
One of a kind.
Okay.
Unless it's not. No, don't, guys. You know I put no effort into these things. Don't pull me up on them.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So I didn't know what they were saying. And I don't know why I didn't know what they were saying. So when I Googled it for this list and it's called One of a Kind, I was like, yeah, of course that's what they're saying. Like, what is wrong with me?
What did you think they were
saying?
It's
just, I have no idea. I know, it's pretty dumb. But it's kind of like, to me, the opposite of Marty's in that I put, you know, it sounds good. Like, I do like listening to it. When it comes on, it's a bit of a bop. That's number three, I actually thought this would be in all three of ours, but Sean missed it out. It's DX, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, same one as you. Has to be in there. Why I've got this one as number three is because I wanted one that as soon as it starts, you know it's on. So I was tied between Stone Cold, The Rock, and DX. But for me personally, I chose DX. Number two, I have Gold Dust because when I was a kid.
Nice pull, Sam.
It's thematically on point for the character. Yes. However, as a kid, I didn't know or care about that. I just also used to make it the entrance music for my creator wrestlers on WWF Attitude because I simply liked it. So that one has a lot of kind of memories for me. And number one, we have...
yes. Yes.
This surprises me.
Okay. So, I'm consistent, right? Was it episode one when I said Great Sasuke has the best entrance music I've ever heard? How was that? You feeling energized now?
Yes.
A great song, but I'm surprised that you had that as your number one. That's so funny. Have you been listening to that since we reviewed it on the show?
No, but if I did, maybe I'd get my editing done on time for the episodes because it's so invigorating.
That's great.
All right, and that's my list.
Wow.
Nice top two, Sam. Nice top two. Quick plug. I have plenty of copies of the Rick Derringer album with Real America on it.
Yeah, I saw you're going on Whatnots as well right now.
I'm gonna go live. I tried to go live yesterday, but again, Gen X and technology didn't really work. I did a test and it turned out the test was the actual live broadcast, so all the items that I loaded in my Whatnot disappeared. I've got to reload them.
Well, you know what? We don't like technology here. We keep it old school and chilling with the villains. So if you're listening to the pod and you're into your LPs, your records, all that kind of stuff, find Finders Keepers Records on Instagram. Hit him up. I saw some of your collection on your Instagram and it looks absolutely incredible. And as soon as I'm on the West Coast, I'm definitely going to come visit and check out and add some gems to my collection. Yeah, thank you for adding to our top five. Until next time. So there we have it. That was our top five. Thank you so much again to our official sponsor, Finders Keepers Records. And if you own a business and you want to support Chilling with the Villain, if you want to sponsor Chilling with the Villain, then hit us up. We have an amazing reach on Instagram. I think we've reached nearly 1 million accounts in the last 30 days alone. And that's just Instagram, let alone TikTok and YouTube. And of course, this podcast as well with all its listeners. So if you want to sponsor the show, hit us up. You can either DM us on Instagram or you can shoot us an email at inquiries@thevillainpod.com. And that's inquiries with an I believe, right, Sam?
That is correct.
Okay, AEW versus NXT. First, we're going to go through AEW Dynamite. Then we're going to go through NXT. And then we're going to discuss and maybe debate which show did we enjoy more. Who had the stronger show? So let's get to it. AEW Dynamite. Boom. The show opens with a cold open as Christian Cage is in the production truck in front of all the screens and monitors. And he tells us that because he's the TNT champion, I like this a lot, actually, because he's a TNT champion and he has a lot of pull, he's made sure that the first half an hour, the first 30 minutes of Dynamite is going to be commercial free, which I really like this. And I feel like it's quite a shame that AEW announced before the show, like I think online or on social media, that it was going to be the first 30 minutes commercial free. Cause I thought this was a really good way to tie it in where, you know, Christian says that he had the pull right to make it happen. So I like it when they do stuff like that, when they incorporate it in the storylines and everything else. But yeah, Christian cuts a promo here. Christian, it's funny. A lot of people are arguing that he's doing his best work of his career, and watching this show, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but it ends with Edge and Christian. And I thought, you could not have predicted this 3 years ago that the main event scene in AEW would be Edge and Christian. How could you predict that? Cool way to open the show. And then we get straight into a big match to start the show. They're promising a lot because they've got that fierce competition with NXT. And they open the show with a banger. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, takes on Swerve Strickland. Now, this was a really, really good match. This was probably the best match out of all two shows this night. I really enjoyed the fact that on the entrances, they showed replays of Bryan Danielson's sort of most recent wins. And they did the same thing for Strickland. And they went out there and they tore the house down. They got like a This Is Awesome chant from just doing like chain wrestling at the start, which, you know, you don't see a lot of in this day and age. So I thought that was really, really cool. If I was AEW and you're looking to push some guys, Swerve Strickland for me is up there. I think he's got a great look. His work is really, really good. He's not really over as a heel. He's over as a babyface. I think he's still supposed to be a heel, but the fans love him. They love the Nana dance. His manager does that dance and the crowd loves that. I mean, there's not really much to dislike. He's cool. You know what I mean? He's got a cool song. He's a good wrestler. He looks cool. So for me personally, he'd be one of the guys that I'd be looking to push in AEW. And I guess that's my only negative from this match is, so Bryan Danielson goes over.
Yeah.
And they just had Strickland beat Hangman Page at the pay-per-view. And that was a really big win for Strickland. Hangman Page, former AEW champion. And I was like, oh, it looks like they're starting to push Strickland. And then coming off the back of that, they had him lose a match here to Bryan Danielson. And I'd understand that people were going to say, well, Danielson shouldn't lose either, which I agree with. But then it's like, okay, don't book the match then. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm them, I'm pushing Strickland hard. And I just thought it was a real shame that he lost this match to Bryan just, you know, a few weeks or a week or two after his big win over Hangman Page. I just thought, you made the hard work of you put him over Hangman. Now it kind of means less. Now he's just lost to to Danielson. He's not got that momentum to ride anymore. So that bit I thought was a bit of a shame. But as a whole, this match, really, really awesome match.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything that you said. Strickland's pretty awesome. No, seriously, I can't. For me, it was the best match out of both shows as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm with you on this 100%.
I mean, the only problem with starting with a banger is that
I know it's downhill else, from here.
Yeah. Everything else is hard to follow. So next up was Powerhouse Hobbs taking on Jericho. Now, I actually hadn't seen AEW for a few weeks, so I had to kind of be caught up. And they did a good job with these replays. So I guess Powerhouse Hobbs is now a part of Don Callis's family, and he's feuding with Jericho. So they had this match, and it was essentially like an extended squash somewhat. Yeah. Maybe not a squash, but like it was a very dominant match. It was like 80% Powerhouse Hobbs and 20% Jericho. And again, I think this, you know, doing something like this, I think is a really, really good idea. I felt like Powerhouse Hobbs is another talent that they've needed to push for quite a long time. And maybe this seems like the start of it. But I will say this, it seems like they've been very stop and start with Powerhouse Hobbs, and they've tried a bunch of different things with him already, and they never really seem to let things run its course. Like, he was in Team Taz for a little bit, then he was doing the Book of Hobbs, which never really amounted to anything. Then he was in QT Marshall's group for a tiny little bit, and then he was out of that, and then I think he was babyface or something, and now he's in Don Callis's family. So it seems like they never really stick with something long enough for the fans to really get behind it. So I'm hoping this new direction they're going with him, they'll stick to, because I think he's, you know, he looks incredible. And of course, like,
yeah,
he's still,
yeah, totally.
He's still got a lot to learn in the ring. Like, he's still quite green. I think he's only been doing it, you know, 2 or 3 years. So that makes sense. He is someone that I think, when I say he, Powerhouse Hobbs, he would really benefit from going on tour in Japan, I think. Like, I say that about a lot of wrestlers, but you go on tour in Japan and you're wrestling every day and you're wrestling some of the best wrestlers in the world, there's just, you know, no chance that you don't get better. And I think with AEW, he probably only wrestles 2, 3, maybe 4 times a month, and they're probably all shorter TV matches. Mm. It's really hard to kind of get that experience. So, but no, this again, I like this. I thought it was very cool of Jericho to do the honors for, yeah, Powerhouse Hobbs. Like, Jericho's smart like that. He knows, like, when it's, you know, when to pass time the torch or whatnot.
Yeah.
Right. If anything, I thought it could have been a little bit shorter. I feel like it didn't need to be as long as it was. But what I really liked about this is it was very different from the first match, and they didn't try to, like I said, we're like, oh, that first match is super hard to follow. And these guys didn't try to follow it because they didn't try to have the same match. They tried to tell a story, and I felt like they did a good job in doing that. So far, like, the show has been pretty good.
Not
enjoyable.
Bad. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. Do you like this one?
Yeah, I think an extended squash is fair. You said at the start, and then you're like, oh, is it? Like, I think that's a totally fair thing to say. I've never seen Powerhouse Hobbs before. He's a unit. To see him coming down the entrance is crazy. So it's exactly, like, if you think about it, like, what else could it be?
Well, that's the thing. Someone like Powerhouse Hobbs, he's not going to be doing arm drags in the opening match. Do you know what I mean? Like, he can only really be like a top guy. Like, look at him.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. All right.
So, as I just said, I've enjoyed everything so far. I don't know if you've not been following AEW. So they've been doing this whole storyline with Adam Cole and MJF, where they became friends, and somehow Roderick Strong, who was Adam's friend, is upset that he's friends with MJF, and now the Kingdom are involved. And they've been doing a whole bunch of these skits or segments where, like, I'm all about storytelling, okay? I think TV wrestling should be episodic TV with character development and everything else. I don't think it should be heavily focused on good matches or long matches.
Totally agreed.
Right. That's what I think. And I think save the matches for the pay-per-views. That being said, and I love Adam Cole, mm-hmm. these segments, I just can't, Like, they've got music over the top of them. They're edited like they're supposed to be like a movie or something, or a skit from Saturday Night Live. I should get into it. So basically, they have a skit where Adam Cole is at Roderick Strong's home. Roderick Strong's injured, so he's asking Adam to do a bunch of jobs for him, even though the Kingdom are there and they're fine. Adam's got a hurt foot. He needs surgery. He says, I really need to get to surgery. And he keeps saying, oh, can you just do this? Can you just do this? He's like, well, I need to get going to, like, I need to do my surgery now. It's like, I don't think the surgery is just waiting for you. Like this, yeah, this whole segment and stuff. Like I said, I love storytelling, and I'm sure it seems like this whole deal is getting over. But for me personally, it's not for me. I'll say that.
Yeah. I'm going to share my thoughts on this for when we compare it to NXT after.
Okay. Fair enough. Next up, we have I was going to say All Atlantic Championship, but no, it's the International Championship match, as Orange Cassidy, one of the former champions, takes on Rey Fénix. Now, as you'd expect, another really good match. Fun, like, you know, what would you use the words? High octane, just pretty much everything you'd explain. Fénix is another guy that I would, when I said about guys to push, Fénix I would push as a singles guy. I think he's very, very marketable. And you've seen what WWE managed to do all those years with Rey Mysterio. And I know it's not fair to compare wrestlers and everything else, but for me, I think Fénix, he's so talented in the ring. I think he looks so cool. I just think he's a wrestler that the people can get behind. And for me, I'd push him, and I'd push Pentagon as a singles wrestler. This match, I think the main thing that hurt it was the fact that it was a babyface versus babyface match, two good guys. So it's kind of, it's hard for the crowd to get behind someone, and it's more about just kind of like applauding the athleticism. And at one point they kind of had Orange Cassidy as the aggressor, but like the people don't want to boo Orange Cassidy. I'm a fan of Orange Cassidy. Like at first, when I first saw him, I know Jim, and he used to come hang out at Ring of Honor shows. And I always thought he was a really cool and just super sweet guy. And when I first saw the whole, you know, hands in the pockets and the kicks, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know about this. But then I've seen how he's had all these matches on AEW, and he is a really good worker, and he knows what he's doing in the ring. And just constantly you'll see in the crowd, like kids dressed up as Orange Cassidy. So it's kind of like, how can you argue with that? Do you know what I mean? Like
he's doing something right. Yeah.
Right. Sure. And this isn't for us. This is for, you know, these kids in the crowd that have paid for their tickets and buy the merchandise. Yeah. It's for them. So he's doing something right. You know, I don't see all the kids dressed up as all the other wrestlers, but it's always it's always Orange Cassidy, or sometimes Darby Allin, who I'm also a big fan of. But like, even if I thought Orange Cassidy was terrible in the ring, which I don't, I'd still have to put him over because of that.
For sure, yeah. So he, contrary to my initial impression of him when I first saw him, that he can wrestle, like you said.
Yeah.
But he does. But him not like really having to is actually good for like his longevity. You know, hopefully he'll be able to kind of, you know, go for a long time, right? He's not killing himself in the ring. He probably could.
I don't know about that. He's been wrestling a lot recently and going pretty hard. But yeah.
Oh, has he really?
And he could still, when he's 60, not wrestle and just do the hands in the pockets.
Yeah, that's true.
Stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty smart.
The only thing because I don't want to go through this whole show and just put everything over. Otherwise, people are going to call me an AEW shill.
Don't worry. I've got some, notes.
But my critique, Orange Cassidy, like I said, he's over, and I think he's a great wrestler. I don't think he needs to be the type of wrestler that wins every single match, right? And I know he must have lost recently, but he had this international title, and and before that, he had like the longest winning streak. He had like more wins in AEW than anyone else. And for me, his gimmick should be an underdog. Like, I think, not only do I think that it wouldn't hurt him to not win all the time, I actually think it would help him be more over if he didn't win all the time. I think it should be almost like 50-50 with him. And when he does win, it means something. And I'm not saying it doesn't mean anything now, but I just think you don't need to give him the Brock Lesnar push. Do you know what I mean? Or the Undertaker. Like he should be an underdog. Like that's, you know, we didn't see Spike Dudley running through the whole entire roster on a winning streak. It just doesn't make sense. So like I said, I actually think he would get more over if he lost more, but obviously they see value in him. They see how popular he is. So they want to run with him. And maybe they're trying to transition him into more of a serious wrestler, but I think right. But the act is there. And I just think, like I said, I just don't, he doesn't need to win all the time. I don't think, unless he's in like a division where he's wrestling people like lower than him all the time, but he's wrestling top guys a lot and beating them. I just think, I don't know. My fear would be that the crowd might get a bit fed up with it after a while. Do you know what I mean? Because he's supposed to be, well, I keep saying he's supposed to be an underdog. I don't know if he's actually supposed to be an underdog, but that's the way I look at him. He's a small guy, right? So, that would be my only critique. But, you know, once again, a good match. And so far, this show's been very kind of match-driven. Like we saw the opening with Christian, mm-hmm. we saw the Adam Cole segment, but just pointing it out to bear that in mind. Next up, we see a pre-tape with Timeless Tony Storm. I'm assuming, Sam, this is the first time you've seen this Timeless gimmick.
I've never seen this before.
So I want to say this. This, you're probably going to be a little shocked by this, but this Timeless Tony Storm deal, I think, has been absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's gotten super duper over. She first did it, she had 90 seconds to talk. And she got herself over in 90 seconds with this gimmick, right? I'm not talking about this week. I'm talking about when she first started doing this gimmick.
Okay.
She every week they give her a minute, or every other week a minute or 90 seconds, which is really hard to get yourself over. And she was doing it, right? She was making the most. She was
making the most of her TV time.
Yeah, maximizing her minute. Her minutes. And that's so important. I don't know if all people realize how valuable TV time is, but she's just smashing it out of the park. This week was the first time that she's done something where I was like, that wasn't necessarily a home run like she's been hitting every other week. But other than that, I'm still a massive fan of this gimmick and I'm excited to see where it goes. I hope they can keep the momentum going, and because she could end up being one of the biggest baby faces in the whole company. And they've been looking for that top female star, it seems, for a long time, and I truly believe she can be it.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying about she's doing a very good job of maximizing the time she has on TV. Completely understand. You said this one, and I have never seen this before. You said this one wasn't her biggest, like wasn't the greatest one she's done. This is all I've seen. This is my only exposure to it. So just bear that in mind. Like that's why, you know, for me, didn't work, but I understand everything you're saying.
Next up, I was really sad to see this. Wardlow is back.
Oh, yeah.
And he's tearing through people. They're basically doing the same thing they did with him before, where he would come out and do the powerbomb how'd you say it? We've got another
symphony.
Symphony. A Wardlow powerbomb symphony. But they chose Matt Sydal. Why did they choose Sydal to do the J-O-B here? We mentioned extended squash earlier. This was
full-on
squash.
The opposite, yep.
It's good that they're trying to rebuild Wardlow. At one point, they built him up, and he was like one of the hottest things in the company. Mm-hmm. And then somehow it just kind of all went boom. They did that one segment where he wrestled 20 security guards or whatever, and it just did not work. It was not good. And I would have thought how hot he was a year ago that now he should be fighting for the championship as like a top contender. But unfortunately, it didn't go that way for Wardlow. So they brought him back, I want to say, last week. Did a similar thing here where he just did all the power bombs. But they did it here with Matt Sydal. I think that's a real shame. I know Sydal, I know he's not one of the top guys. And I know he's been around a long time, but like he's still a talent that I think could offer a lot. Yeah. And also, you kind of kill the credibility of this. Like it would have meant so much more if Matt Sydal actually had an entrance. Because as soon as they did the whole, and in the ring, Matt Sydal, we just knew exactly what it was going to be. So you just took that element of surprise away from the audience completely. And I know they're trying to save TV time. They're trying to get through stuff as much as possible. But like, dude, take a couple of minutes, take a 30 seconds a minute from one of the other matches and let Sydal have an entrance, because it's just, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the and in the ring gimmick. I know why they do it, but I don't think you should do it to like established stars. Like local talent, sure. Established stars, I don't really think that's cool.
This whole thing was a bit of a miss for me. You're talking about them trying to do things for time, but also at the same time, I think it was Bryan Danielson, right? You said they did a good job of doing some like replays so you know where you are with him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I don't watch it, right? I didn't know Wardlow was out or is back or what's going on. I'm going to show you something on screen, Marty, okay? Mm-hmm. And I want you to, and I'm going to show it on screen and then I'm going to get rid of it. And then I want you to tell me what you just saw. Are you ready? Try and take some of this information in, because this is all I had to know what was happening to get me caught up. Ready?
Okay. Will you just show me Wardlow, a screenshot of him walking to the ring?
Nope. That is how long, because I timed it, his element was on screen for. It tells you he destroyed Griff Garrison in 1 minute on last week's Dynamite. Wardlow, at Real Wardlow. And his 2023 record, 10-2.
Right.
But they put it on screen for just over 2 seconds.
Oh, I didn't even read it, yeah.
No, you didn't. You didn't. Right. And that part at the top, that was on screen for just over 2 seconds. And that's all I had for my catch-up. And it was gone. Exactly what happened to you. It was gone before I could even read it. So this whole thing just confused me. And I felt like they could have done... You said, they started off with a bang and they did a really good job of letting us catch up with Bryan Danielson. We got like the opposite here.
Right.
And so this just was where the show started falling apart for me, to be honest.
Right. I mean, AEW has had a lot of criticism in the past for like assuming the people watching know everything that's going on. And that's one thing I always wanted to put a ring of honor. Like, let's not assume anyone knows anything. We've got to remind them all the time. It's, you know, it's like, McDonald's, right? Everyone knows what a Big Mac is, but McDonald's still spend millions of dollars a year advertising Big Macs, reminding everyone what they are. And you've got to do the same with a TV show. You've got to remind people what's going on. And if you're trying to push and elevate someone, you've got to show who they are. And you can't just assume that the audience knows. Because like all the AEW diehards, they know. But if you're a general casual viewer, which sounds like, well, actually, you haven't watched AEW really at all, but you are now, and you're like, I don't know what's going on. So, yeah, I think they could do a better job of that.
Yeah, because I know Matt, well, I know Wardlow as well, but I know Matt Sydal, who he is. I thought the story was he was, like, injured or something, not that Wardlow's on a rampage.
Right, okay.
So I actually was, and if they want to do a better job, which sounds like they don't really care, but if they want to do a better job of converting people or getting more casual fans in, this is like exactly a great example of something that they could do a lot better, because I just watch it and I have zero clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like at all.
And that turns you off, right? That means I'm not going to watch next week because I'm confused, right? If I watch a show on Netflix and I watch the first episode, I'm confused, I just switch off.
Imagine going to a house party and everyone knows each other apart from you, and they're all in a group and they're talking about an inside joke, and you're just sat there like you're not even on the sofa with them. Like, that's how it makes you feel. Like, there's like this inside club and you're not a part of it.
So are you giving me PTSD, bro? you said you wouldn't tell anyone about that time.
Yeah. Oh, dear. You left with a party bag.
Okay, that's true. Jay White takes on Hangman Page next. This is pretty much everything you'd expect it to be. Two good workers. Of course, Hangman Page, I have a lot of history with him. Jay White as well, the Switchblade, have a lot of history with Jay White. This was a really good match. The guys worked really, really hard. I will say this, I think because of the first match, I was just kind of wrestled out by this point. So I wasn't really interested in seeing another good match. So this might have felt better like on a pay-per-view, and this could be a pay-per-view match. But I thought this was, of course it was a good match. If I had to give a critique, they did like the whole match, Jay White worked on Hangman Page's leg. And then I even called the spot in my head. I was like, Hangman should go for the Hangman Lariat. He lands hard on his legs. That his knee tweaks or whatever, and Jay comes, grabs him, and gives him the Blade Runner, his finish. I think it's called that.
Yes.
And they actually did that spot right near the finish, but when he went for the Hangman Lariat, landed on his feet, sold his knee, Jay White grabbed him, but then like Hangman reversed the Blade Runner, and then he went into something else. And then the finish, I want to say Hangman was distracted by Prince Nana, and did Jay White hit him with the belt or something? I can't remember now, but it felt like the whole story of the match was Jay White working Hangman Page's leg, but then that was not incorporated into the finish. So I kind of felt like, what was the point of doing that all if you didn't pay it off in the end? But that sounds like I'm kind of slagging it all off. That's just me finding like, you know, a minuscule part to kind of give some critique. What do you think about this match?
I wasn't mad on it. I really like Hangman Page. I'm not as mad on Jay White as it sounds like you are. I'm going to say this. I don't know how this is going to come out, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it. When we did the Q&A episode and someone asked, would you like to join the Elite or BC Gold? I've never seen BC Gold before. Now I understand why your answer was like so diplomatic. Like, I would want to get away from those idiots. Like, how embarrassing is that? Like, the tricycles and the cardboard cutout. Like, that's just, what a shambles. And it's like all I could focus on the entire time. It just was not. No, it sucked.
I love Juice Robinson.
No,
you're not a fan?
Sucked. Not a fan in the slightest. So it's just the worst thing I've ever seen. I just got really pissed off by that point.
I will say this. Hangman Page is probably the only wrestler that can pull off brown wrestling gear. So fair play to Hangman Page.
Yeah. He's got brown pants.
Yeah, brown pants.
But,
good on him.
But in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah.
Dearie me. Yeah.
So this match led into this Jay White and MJF promo. So
yeah.
Jay White won, MJF came out on the stage, and they had this back and forth segment. It was a pretty long segment. MJF is a phenomenal talker. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that whatsoever. Jay White is an all right talker. But the story here is that Jay White stole MJF's belt. And I was watching it, I was like, please don't tell me that's the story. Like, I've seen this story done so many times where a heel will steal the babyface's championship belt, and that's the story. I was like, but what I couldn't understand is they did an angle like 2 or 3 weeks ago where a mystery group beat up Jay White in the back, and all we saw was one person wearing an MJF devil mask, and that was the big segment. And after the show, everyone was talking like, who was under the MJF mask? Was it MJF? Was it somebody else? And it seemed like they had a lot of buzz coming from this angle. And I was like, oh, good for AEW. They're doing some like episodic TV and some, you know, cliffhanger endings to their show. And Jay White just briefly mentions that here in the promo, just says about, oh, you know, you attacked me in the mask, whatever. That should be what the story should be about. Not about this old story that's been done so many times, you stole my belt. Like, who cares? The story should be, is Jay White should say, you attacked me, MJF. You attacked me, you and your group, blah, blah, blah. And MJF denying it, being like, no, I promise it wasn't me. And like Jay White having all this evidence to suggest that MJF did it, and MJF like not being able to like prove the evidence wrong. And, you know, Jay White should be like, you know, because you attacked me, I'm going to take everything away from you. And full gear, I'm going to beat you for your world title to get my revenge for the attack you did. And that could be the story. And the whole time MJF is denying it, and MJF's trying to find out who was the one that attacked Jay White. And that would be really, really good episodic storytelling. And it would make for a far more interesting story for this match rather than Jay White stole his belt, which
you stole my belt. No, I didn't. Yeah.
Right. We've seen this in AEW many a times. It's like a go-to storyline, but I felt like there's a much stronger story there, which I thought it was a shame.
A mistaken identity story has higher stakes, like, apparently, right, than like a playground. You stole my lunchbox. No, I never.
Right.
Totally. Another thing, this actually confused me further, this little post-match segment, because MJF's head wasn't ultimately in the game, right? Because he's worried about his friend Adam with a hurt leg.
Right.
Okay. And they played this directly after where Adam, like Hangman Page, has a hurt leg. Right. So okay. Do you see where I'm getting at? Because this confused me further. I thought now MJF is friends with Hangman Page.
Right.
Because if you're going to come up with something like that, maybe distinguish it. If you've got two people called Adam with a...
Well, there's three people called Adam now.
With a hurt leg. But yes, but yeah, you get my point. Like both of them have hurt... These two both have hurt legs. So I'm thinking, why... Just go... Your friend just left. Like, go check... It turned out there's a completely different Adam with a hurt leg, which is a callback to a cinematic segment that we saw earlier.
Right.
So by this point, I'm already checked out.
So it's this is why
it's just another further example of like they just don't seem to kind of like consider like when they write these things,
right?
The view or the lens of somebody who is just turning on for the first time, and well, they're not going to really win anyone over doing.
They're not
doing now.
They're not writing this show for you, Sam, and that's why I wanted when I came up with the idea for the podcast. Well, we kind of come up with it together, but this is why I wanted to have you on because the perspectives that I want on the show, because it's all very well having people that know everything that's going on and that are smart to the business, but I want that casual fan's opinion. And like someone like you, who's not really an AEW fan, I want to get you on here and ask you why and what you thought of this, you know? So I find it really interesting having you on here. And that's something that I didn't even think of, you see? But now it makes a lot of sense. Like, oh yeah, there's another Adam with a hurt leg. So I can see why that would be confusing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just feel like, and it's called All Elite Wrestling. And yeah, I do feel like there's some like elite club that I'm not a part of. I just feel alienated whenever I try and check in.
Interesting.
And that's really my main, well, I have honestly have a lot of criticisms of AEW, but that's the main one. Just like, it seems impenetrable.
I get it. Yeah. The first thing about Fight Club is you don't speak about Fight Club.
Right.
Well, we had a fight next as Saraya defended a women's championship against Hikaru Shida.
Mm.
They did another title switch here. Did I even mention earlier Orange Cassidy won back the international championship? I think Phoenix is hurt, so they switched the belt there and switched the belt here as well. Saraya just won the title back at Wembley, and now Shida's won the belt again for the third time. Now, I do think it is a good idea on a show like this to do some title changes as they're going up against NXT, and you want people to be like, what's going on the channel? Like, if the worst thing you can say is what's going on? Oh, nothing's happening. If there's title changes, that's a good thing. I will say this. I do think there should have been a AEW world title match on this show, and it should have been built up where you thought the title might change. Cause this, I'm not sure if people really, how can I say this? This is obviously not as important as the men's world title. Do you know what I mean? And the crowd did pop big when Shida won. They popped really, really big. And I think they were happy to see Saraya lose the belt. Again, my one critique, because I'm going to give a critique to everything, the spray paint. So Saraya gave Hikaru Shida her finish, the like pick me up DDT. And Shida kicked out of a finish. Like, okay. Then they did another spot where Saraya sprayed her in the face with spray paint, picked her up and gave her a finish again. 1-2 kick out. I feel like every time I've seen the spray paint on the show, it never works. But like it either the people will kick out or it gets turned around and they get it sprayed in their face. Right. If you're going to have a gimmick, you've got to protect the gimmick because otherwise what's the point? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like if the spray paint doesn't work, then why are you using it all the time? Why are you carrying it everywhere? You got to protect your gimmick. I try to be really protective with the umbrella. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm going to use that. It's going to mean something. Do you know what I mean? Like I joined the Bullet Club, I hit Adam Cole with that umbrella. It was a shot heard around the world. You got to protect your gimmick, right? Like don't just use it as a false finish. If it's going to be your thing, make it something. And I just like, you sprayed her in the face with it and hit your finish and she still kicked out. So it's like now the spray paint and the finish are kind of non-effective.
Meaningless.
Together. It's like, and she kicked out both of them together. It's like, what else do you even have? Like your gimmick and your finisher? I don't know. Like the match was fine, but like that, I just thought, ugh, like you got to be smarter with your, protect the gimmick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. You've brought this up before on the pod, but I think this is probably the most egregious example of it where we actually had something, you know, where we brought it up and here's two great, you know, doing them like, it compounds the effect.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good example. yeah, the match was fine. Again, I've just got to be honest, I was kind of checked out with the entire show by this point because of everything that happened before. Oh, I've got a fact about Sheeta. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So, no, in fact, let me just show you it. I'll show you it instead. Ready?
Show me on this audio podcast. Okay. I there missed it. What did it say?
Yeah, you did.
it says, let's see if I can read it in time. No wrestler has held the AEW Women's World title longer. Oh, it's
yeah.
gone.
2.7 seconds. Yeah. No wrestler has held the AEW Women's World title longer. Open brackets, 397 days, close brackets. Hikaru Shida at Shida Hikaru. 2023 singles record, 10-2.
The same as Wardlow's, apparently. Yeah, so you're saying those graphics, they don't stay on screen long enough, huh?
Maybe keep them up for a little bit longer.
I read slow, so like, yeah, I just could not read all that at all. Yeah, okay. Well, so there's some timing issues. Next up, just before the main event, we see a segment of MJF backstage being interviewed, and the Acclaimed come up to him and said, hey, if Adam Cole isn't here, you know, we can be your tag team partners. And MJF turns him down, leaves, and then Billy Gunn calls out, I believe it was Max Caster, saying, hey, you know, why are you speaking on behalf of us with that scumbag or whatever? And Max Caster says, you know, he's my friend, blah, blah, blah. Now, they've done a lot of this in AEW, like the he's my friend type storyline. Like a lot of the storylines seem to be based around being friends and friendship. But I actually really enjoyed this little segment. I thought this was good story development, good episodic TV. The thing with AEW is they have their divisions. And they seem to just to keep people in the divisions, right? So you're in the tag team division, that's all you do. And if you're not currently like the champions or fighting for the belts, it's almost like there's not much for you to do. And for a tag team like the Acclaimed, who at one point was super duper over, after they won the tag team titles and they lost them, it felt like they didn't know what to do with them anymore. And so then they put them in the trios division with Billy Gunn, which just doesn't seem as important as the tag team division. But like a really good way, if you've got a tag team that's super over, a great way to get them over is to start having them sort of work with the top guys. And we saw that back in the day, whether it was the Hardy Boys, you know, they start working with Stone Cold and Triple H, or we saw the Steiner brothers working with Sting and Lex Luger. But having that association with a top guy or a main eventer just elevates them even more. So I thought this was cool to see this segment with the Acclaimed and MJF, and I thought, yeah, that's a good way to use the Acclaimed, because it feels like for a while they haven't really known what to do with them, and they were super duper over at one point.
Why do you? So you keep saying for AEW specifically, like, oh, here's a great example of episodic storyline. Did they not used to do a good job, and now they're getting better, or like why?
They're definitely better now. They're definitely getting better. Oh, okay. I think that for the longest time it's been more like heavy focus on matches and stuff, which is not wrong. Just for me personally, I have more interest in storylines than everything else. So they're definitely, it seems like they're definitely trying harder now. Or okay. I know they added like Jimmy Jacobs to the writing team, so maybe he's a part of it. It seems like they're doing more now, or maybe I'm just noticing it more now because I'm reviewing it. But yeah, I think there's only been a couple of examples in this show where I said that. No, for me, episodic TV, that's everything. You got to tell those stories to get people hooked. You have to. Yep. If you want, next week we're going to have a great match, nobody cares. Tell me the story. I've seen 1,000 great matches. Like I've been wrestling 20 years. I've been watching it for 30. I've seen millions of great matches. Just give me a story. To Christian and sort of Edge sort of stood there over him watching, and we kind of went off the air with Chaos, one of these big brawls, which funny enough is another way, another kind of go-to I feel like for AEW, like they do this every now and then where they end the show in a big chaotic brawl. This was Edge's first match in AEW. Like you, I'd kind of, after all these matches you do kind of get a little bit checked out, but it was cool to see Edge in the ring and wrestle, and obviously he can still go and the crowd was really, really into it. I did think it was a bit of a shame that if Luchasaurus is going to be Christian's heater. Like, the first thing Edge does is like beats his heater. I almost feel like that's a shame. Maybe he should have beat Nick Wayne, but mind you, saying that Nick Wayne just turned heel, so he shouldn't be doing a job right away either. So I don't know if it was the best first opponent for Edge. And I feel like the end of the show, maybe it should have been more focused on Edge rather than, I don't know, I guess they've added Bryan Danielson into the storyline now. But yeah, I guess the main takeaway from this is that Edge is in AEW, and time will tell if it's going to make a difference at all to business.
I think it will. And I know I've not been like, on this podcast, I've kind of been a bit harsh on Edge a lot. He's got the worst spear, which I still maintain. And now he hasn't got the hair. It's just 10 times worse. But yeah, this is his first match in AEW, apparently, according to you. I didn't think it was that amazing. Nothing. It didn't really light me on fire. I was already checked out at that time, so maybe it's just my terrible attitude. Buzzkill again.
Do you think they should have, like, did you even realize this was his first match in AEW?
No. Okay. I mean, sorry. I did, because of just like, because we talked about him coming to AEW last week and the timing.
Okay. Yeah.
I was like, well, he couldn't have fit it in any other one. So I figured it out. But yeah, but by looking at it, you wouldn't have known it was.
Yeah, maybe they should have built up the whole
roster for sure.
Maybe throughout the whole show they should have kept building up, saying tonight Edge's first match in AEW, just kept building it up throughout the whole entire show. Maybe
there wasn't any of that really.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, because you really want to keep people towards the end. The night is getting later. You got to keep people hooked. You know what I mean? So maybe they should have built that more throughout the show. But they're trying to fit a lot in one show.
There's only so much time. Yeah, I understand that. But surely for special occasions, you'd do something, right? Something to kind of market.
If you've got Edge, let's make it seem like the biggest deal ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was just like a flat execution, in my opinion.
Okay.
No Edge.
No
Edge. Yeah.
So that was AEW Dynamite. We'll give our thoughts of the whole entire show after our NXT review. Yep. So we'll kind of contrast both and see which was the better show. NXT, they also had a show. So Sam, I'm going to take it over to you.
Yep, I'm doing the play-by-play this week. I thought I'd give it a go. Are you ready for this?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. NXT. The show begins with Cody Rhodes stating his task for tonight as the I suppose guest GM to a pretty good crowd reaction, which, like every Cody promo, sounds more like an audition for Hollywood than an actual promo. Oh, regardless, my. I know he's your friend. Regardless, this is cut short. The kid who plays Draco Malfoy comes out wearing his dad's suit. Is he supposed to be Irish or Russian? In short, the intro spent over 12 minutes just to say there is a certain match with a certain guest referee. They spent so much time warbling on trying to get to an incredibly simple point that for a moment, I thought they were me on this podcast. Marty, the intro, what did you think?
So it's funny you mentioned the Hollywood thing. Cody.
Sorry, man.
No. So Cody is like one of the most charming men. He's just like, Cody could do things to like wind you up and you'd be upset at him. And then you'd see him, but then instantly just win you over because he's so charming with his words and the way he acts and everything else. That being said, I think there was a while back where he said that he like workshopped his promos, and I don't know why he said that. And I really wish he didn't, because ever since he said that, it kind of takes me out of his promos. Like, he's a great talker and he has the crowd behind him. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's a very strong promo. I just wish he didn't say that, because it kind of takes me out sometimes of the promos now, thinking like, oh, this is not genuine. This has been workshopped to a bunch of people. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. That's just me nitpicking. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a fun way to start the show. The crowd, I don't think I've ever seen Cody there. So they're starting with a bang. Like, they're trying to hook the viewers from the get-go, which is very important.
He also announced something that the Dusty Rhodes Classic something. I didn't really know what that was. I'd left it out of my play-by-play. What's that about?
It's a tag team tournament that they've done a whole bunch of times, which they've named after Dusty Rhodes, like the Dusty Rhodes Classic. It's just a big tag team tournament. And I think the winners win trophies and maybe number one contenderships or something. So he was just announcing that it's coming back, I guess.
Yeah, cool. All right, then. The first match is Asuka versus somebody called Roxanne Perez. After the episode, I went back and found her name because I didn't get it the first time. After they both get into the ring, somebody who can only be described as frighteningly Gen Z rolls down in a toy army tank. The point I immediately knew what I was getting myself in for, as I have never watched NXT before, subsequently developing an eyebrow twitch that has yet to subside. She joins the commentary table with Booker T and a guy who didn't want to dress for the occasion and has the body language of somebody that wants to be anywhere but there. The commentary isn't actually commentary. It's the audio representation of an iMessage group. Oh, Halloween is my favorite. Yeah, you love Halloween, don't you? Yeah, I'll be there. Ooh, wild. Asuka wins the match.
Whoa, well, you really...
opening.
So you sounds like you didn't like this show.
Well, mate, I've never seen NXT in my life, but jeez Louise. Anyways, first match, pretty fine opener. I love Asuka, as you know.
Yeah, dude, when I was watching this, I've always known Asuka's good, but I'm just watching her being like, man, Asuka, she really knows what she's doing. She is so good. Dude. She knows her act. She looks like a superstar. She can work. The lady she was wrestling, is it Roxanne Perez?
Roxanne Perez, yeah.
She seems to have a lot of potential.
The prodigy.
Mm-hmm. Watching this match, as a worker watching it, it's just so clear like how much more polished and experienced and confident Asuka is compared to Roxanne, which makes sense because, you know, Roxanne, I assume she's only been wrestling a few years or so. I felt like this is a good way to use Asuka. You know, they brought a bunch of the main roster people on for this show. And I mean, we'll get into it with the show, but I felt like the majority of them, they used them well, and they used them to kind of elevate the current NXT stars. And I thought, you know, someone like, you know, Roxanne Perez getting the chance to wrestle someone like Asuka, it's only going to up her game. So again, I thought that was a really good way of using Asuka. And they also didn't insult the fans' intelligence. They didn't have Roxanne Perez go over. You know, when I do these, I do some indie shows sometimes, and I'll wrestle like the local guy, and it'd be someone kind of inexperienced, and the promoters want me to put them over, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'll do whatever you want me to. I don't care. Just pin me, pay me. But is the audience really going to believe it yet? You know what I mean? Like, they've got to be able to believe it to get behind it. So I thought maybe they were going to have Roxanne Perez win, but no, they went with Asuka, and it was the right decision.
Totally the right decision. And yeah, that Roxanne Perez does seem to have like great potential, and obviously Asuka is just really good. But there was like an element, I was just watching it, I was watching Asuka specifically, who was a like really good wrestler in this match. I was just reminded of like, you know, when a dad is like playing with his infant, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just so controlled. I don't know. But that's neither here nor there. Okay. Pretty good opener. Next up is a pub rules match that I don't want to talk about. After that, John Cena comes out to suck up to the NXT crowd for some reason. And an Adobe Firefly AI image with the prompt "wrestler with tan in tank top" comes out to get in Cena's face, which from a charisma standpoint is the equivalent of that time Johnny Knoxville challenged Butterbean to a boxing match.
So hang on, the pub rules match. Why don't you want to talk about the pub rules match?
Oh, I can't be... No, don't make me do that.
Really? So the pub rules match, what was it? It was Gallus, the guys from Scotland. They're good guys. Taking on, what was it, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and Ridge Holland. I thought this would be down your alley. Like, this for me, I'm not into gimmick matches. I'm so over all the furniture being used and everything else. Not for me. The crowd seemed to really enjoy it, though. It does seem like every big show now has to have one of these furniture matches and people enjoy them. For me personally, I'm just bored of them personally. But why don't you want to talk about this match?
Like, honestly, man, I can't stand Pete Dunne with his... I wonder where he's seen that before. Snap. Wonder where he got that from, huh?
Well, here's the thing.
I'm surprised he agreed to do it, because you've never done a pub brawl match.
Well, here's the thing. When you get something over in wrestling, the problem is that how do I word this? It's a blessing in disguise, because you get something over, but then loads of people are going to take it. Do you know what I mean? So it's expected to happen. You know, if you're such a creative type like me, a lot of your ideas are going to be taken by other people. So, but back to the match. Yeah, this match is it's pretty much what you'd expect. The only thing I thought was odd is, like, at the start of the match, Tyler Bate did a dive onto everyone, but, like, he took out his own guys as well, which you see in wrestling. Like, you have, like, everyone will catch him. But, like, it doesn't really get that good a reaction from the crowd because, dude, there's three guys on the other team. Like, they could have all catched Tyler Bate, and it would have told the story better of Tyler Bate taking out his competition out with a dive. But the fact that Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland caught it as well, people kind of like, yay, oh, like, oh, he hurt his own teammates as well. Like, I really don't like that spot whatsoever. But yeah, this match, all good workers, all know what they're doing, but not for me.
Yeah. And then John Cena pops out.
Oh, and you're talking about Bron Breakker.
Bron Breakker.
That's Rick Steiner's son, if you didn't know.
Yeah, well, now I do.
I'm trying to remember what happened in this John Cena promo. I mean,
he's just giving, you know, he was really giving platitudes to the crowd, which I felt like, if anything, it should be the other way around. But it was kind of symbiotic, like everybody was happy. And then Bron Breakker comes out to get in. He basically shows a little bit of disrespect to John Cena,
yeah,
which is not important now, but becomes important later.
Well, I think, again, they're using the main roster guy as well. Like, the Bron Breakker is one of their top guys. They obviously have big plans for him for the future. Here, they're just sprinkling some of that Cena dust on him, letting him brush shoulders with John Cena. It's only going to be beneficial to him. So, again, I think a really good way of using John Cena. And I feel like it's always good to see John Cena. Like, he's not going to be wrestling forever, so we should appreciate the times that we do
while he's
see
around
him.
For sure. Yes. Mm-hmm. Following this segment, LA Knight, who I actually like, comes out in quite an enjoyable guest ref outfit befitting of his personality. It doesn't look the best. He's no Kimberly Page, right? But but it captures his essence perfectly. I think, you know, it's a full mark sale. Would you agree? I think you'd agree.
I thought it was great personally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's followed by Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley, of course, and Draco Malfoy, who turns out is called Dragunov, like from Tekken, for a very middling match, but still quite enjoyable because the crowd are having fun and Ripley is supremely good at the pantomime antics, both elements supplying the proceedings with a fun zap of energy. LA Knight tries his best at enforcing when some disruptors arrive, but the damage is done and Dominic takes the L.
I am, you know, I'm a massive fan of Dominic and especially this tandem of Dominic and
Mammy
Ripley. I think it's gold. And I just think, dude, like Dominic, he just looks like a sleazy, slimy heel. He's got that mullet and I don't know, like the slim physique. And there's not many people anymore in wrestling trying to be proper villains. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And Dominic is, and he's one of these guys, he's like a traditional old school heel. So I'm all over Dominic. He's one of my favorite wrestlers to watch, one of my favorite wrestlers going, and he's still new. So like, I think he's only been wrestling, what, 2-3 years? He's only going to get better. So I think the sky's the limit for Dominic. This whole act with Mummy, Rhea Ripley is money. I think they should keep this going for as long as they can and just let it keep building fire and everything else. The only thing I don't like, the only disappointing thing, maybe I'm wrong for saying this, but so Rhea and Dominic, they're an on-screen couple, but everyone knows that they're not a couple in real life. And I don't know if that kind of hurts it somewhat. And like, they don't do anything. Like they don't really, it's not like they're making out or anything else like that. Like Eddie Guerrero would do with China back in the day.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I think he did, unless I imagined that. So maybe that kind of hurts the gimmick a little bit. And I guess everyone would say like, well, everyone knows wrestling is a work and wrestling is fake, but it's still kind of like, you know, you still want to suspend your disbelief. But even still, even that being said, they still do a really good job of, they just look great together and they get the crowd so warmed up. And the fans love Rhea Ripley, but hate Dominic. So it's a really good dynamic. And Ilya Dragunov, he used to wrestle all the time in Germany. Is he Russian? I'm not sure.
Oh, I have no idea. His accent was like, sometimes it was Irish, sometimes it was, I had no idea.
But he is a really, really good in-ring wrestler. I've seen him have some great matches. So I remember watching him wrestling in Germany years ago, being like, whoa, who's this kid? He's freaking good. So, and this match was a pretty sort of standard match, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I think it was everything it needed to be.
This sounds awful, but it's the best way I can... I mean, it'll make me sound awful, because if I'm like, hey, right, guys, and everyone is, all the listeners like, no, no one does that, I'm going to look insane. But Dominic Mysterio plays the character of, and the best way I can describe it is, you know, when you, like, that kind of person who you kind of, like, want to... them to kind of like come and have a go at you so you have an excuse to slap them. Do you know what I mean? Like at the gas station or something, you're like, oh God, I hope he gets in my face so I can slap him.
That's great. That's
character. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. And he does it perfectly. Like I felt like their relationship was more like Rhea's kind of like almost like manipulating him.
I guess
he's almost simping for her. Your criticism of them doesn't actually bother me because I'm reading into it differently. So
okay, maybe you're right.
Maybe I'm wrong. Rhea Ripley's so good at what she does at like the apron that you could be forgiven for thinking she's just like a really good kind of like manager or valet or whatever you'd say.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
But like she's also an insanely good wrestler in her own
amazing
right.
Amazing wrestler. Like
incredibly well rounded. Like,
yeah.
She, like, nuts,
she's,
really. But
anyway. She's going to be a, if she's not already, she's going to be a multi, multi millionaire from wrestling. So, and she's only like 26 or 27 or something. So, was it at the end of this match where Baron Corbin and Dijak came out? Was it at the end of this one?
Post-match shenanigans ensue. Yes, that was next to my thing. Do you want to just go for it?
Yeah, tell me what happened.
Post-match shenanigans and cutaways ensue. But the main takeaway is that Baron Corbin needs to cut his shirt sleeves off with way less zeal than he currently does and looks ridiculous. That's all I had for that segment. He needs to leave more.
Leave what? Have more shoulder showing?
More shirt. No, okay, less. More shirt. He needs more shirt. Less.
So Dijak and Baron Corbin both came out. And Dijak's been in WWE for years and they've never really known what to do with him. And Corbin's been there for like 10 or 11 years and he's done so much different stuff. And he's always, you know, done really well at what he's done. But obviously there's only so long you can stay on top. When I saw Dijak and Baron Corbin together, I was like, they should make these guys a tag team. Like, Dijak shave his head.
What, you thought that way back then?
No, just watching this show.
Oh, watching it. Okay, sorry. I
was like, Dijak and Corbin, they're both like tall and have similar physiques. I would make them a tag team and have them like the new Skyscrapers or not Legion of Doom, but you know what I mean? Like, I was like, damn, these guys should be a tag team. That'd be cool. Okay.
My biggest crush arrives to the arena, but it's not enough to save the show.
Who was your biggest crush?
What?
Oh, is it Jay Cargill turned up?
Yeah,
she did. Oh, okay. Oh, yes, she did. Yeah, of course, she looked she looked like a freaking superstar, by the way. Yeah. Every time the couple of things WWE have done with Jade Cargill, I'm like thinking, damn, why did AEW not do this stuff with her? Why did they just have her beating everyone, wrestling matches?
I know.
Like, this makes her look like so much more of a superstar.
They've done more with her in like a week, WWE, than No, I agree. Yeah. A match between Danny Palmer and Lola Vice occurs. And I only know their names because I read the screen element that said so, as it was at this point in the show when I said to Marty, I'll try the play-by-play this week. It wasn't terrible. One of them won. I think it was Lola Vice.
I didn't know either of these wrestlers.
No.
I think they said it was like a women's breakout tournament. So
okay, that's probably why then.
Two of the students at the PC... I would guess that they probably weren't wrestlers before. They were probably, I mean, they looked like gymnasts, both of them.
Yeah.
They both were green, but both super athletic. The girl that won, Lola Vice.
Lola Vice.
She seemed to have a bit of personality and charisma. So yeah, it wasn't bad at all. You know, one of these, you know, both of them could have bright futures. So I thought it was a nice little taste. And like, it's an NXT show. So it was cool for them to put those guys out there with so much eyes on the product. Do you know what I mean? I thought that was kind of cool. Did you miss the John Cena and Carmelo Hayes segment with Trick Williams?
You can talk about it now if you want, the backstage segment. We can do that.
Yeah. This was my favorite part of the show. So basically it was an angle with John Cena, Carmelo Hayes, and Trick Williams. And they do this segment where Carmelo and Trick, there's like tension between them. John Cena comes in and says, hey, you guys are friends, right? Blah, blah, blah. Carmelo Hayes, I have your back for tonight's main event. Carmelo's like, cool. He leaves. And then Trick Williams asks John Cena. Cena's like, oh, you seem, you know, what's up? What's the matter with you? And he says, huh, John, like, when did you know that it was your time? And John Cena says, come on, kid, let's go for a chat. And I just thought, again, this was just the perfect way to use John Cena. They're using him in story development. And I just thought, I was like, I don't watch NXT. So I know who Carmelo right. Hayes is. He's a great guy. And yeah. he looks like a superstar. This Trick Williams, I've heard of him. I've seen him on social media. He looks like a superstar. But I knew nothing about the storyline or anything else. And instantly I was like, oh, I get what they're doing. They told me that in the 2 minutes of the segment that it was. And, you know, I felt that they did such a good job where I was almost like, damn, like, I want to watch next week to see what happens, to find out what goes on in this story. So I thought they did a really, really good job of this. This was my favorite part of the whole entire show, the part that you wanted to miss out.
Yeah, I wasn't going to miss it. All right, cool. You're going to like this bit, Marty. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A cinematic comedy bit ensues, which was actually fun. Really kitschy and embarrassing, silly and goofy, doesn't take itself seriously and was cute. And I am genuinely curious as to what Marty thinks about this, but I'm starting to warm up to NXT greatly now that I understand what it is.
This was the nice. Chase You segment you're talking about?
Chase You.
So I think they do these backstage segments where, it's not backstage, but they a segment where, I forget his name, the guy, the main guy, I've wrestled him before. He's a great guy. He was one of the Bravado brothers back in the day. And I guess he's like the head of a university and he has this yeah. Chase You. I think yeah. Chase You were really over at one point, but I'm not a big fan of these segments when they're filmed like a movie where they're just so obviously not real and phony. The idea, the gimmick, I quite like, but the whole like way it's shot, the way it's edited, I think there's a better way of doing it where you could film it and make it look real, but they choose not to. So that personally, I'm not a fan of. It is episodic TV, it is character development, so I'll give them a gold star for that. I just wish they didn't present it in this way.
I think the presentation of it, which is actually why I really like it, was which is what made NXT click for me, and I'll explain very quickly. We have soap operas in the UK. They're not very popular in the US. They're also popular in Australia, and obviously you have telenovelas. There's in the UK, they're all super kind of true to life filmed and just kind of are boring and they kind of suck, but my mum loves them. Now there's one called Home and Away, which is also a soap opera, which is episodic TV, but it's filmed like a movie, just inexplicably. For some reason, once you kind of accept that it's not true to life and it is a movie, I can actually enjoy it for what it is. So I was watching this particular segment and was like, I understand what they're doing now. It's terrible acting, not as bad as AEW's little bits, but which they should have known better. But I thought they're trying to get these people across and also show what they can do in segments of just pure entertainment as well as in the ring. And when I understood that, and I was pretending that I was watching Hollyoaks or Home and Away, I understood it and I actually find it quite enjoyable to just look at it through that lens.
Wow. Okay.
But you didn't see that happening, did you?
Could have just said you liked it, but interesting. Yeah. I unfortunately can't jump on with you with that. I like my absolutely wrestling fair. More real.
Absolutely fair. The AI approximation of a wrestler is hulking out in the back room, and Paul Heyman appears behind him, and the blocking of the scene is pretty well done. So another unrealistic segment. I know you don't like it where because just of the way it was shot where Heyman just pops out from nowhere. But again, I'm already in at that point, so I'm liking it. Basically, the opposite thing happened to me with NXT as what happened to me with AEW, where I was in until I wasn't. With NXT, I wasn't in until I was.
My only takeaway from this is I didn't realize Heyman had gone gray, which was kind of...
I know! I was going to ask you that. It seemed like it happened overnight.
I think it's been for a while, but
he's given up on the Just for Men.
I guess he has, yeah. But I guess it just adds to his wise man gimmick, I guess, being yes, great. Yeah. So, embrace it, why not?
Next, Carmelo Hayes, a name I actually know, comes down to the ring accompanied by Fast X actor John Cena. But before the match happens, another backstage segment jarringly occurs because the target demographic obviously has ADHD. Asuka is the best, but nothing of grave concern happens, making the cutaway irrelevant and puzzling.
Oh, this was weird when like the women's roster was like lining up to talk to Asuka. It was so odd. I don't know why they did this.
Yeah, because this wasn't before the match. the matches start, one entrance already happened, and as it was on the tail end of happening, they just cut to some like a jarring cutaway non sequitur.
Yeah, so Carmelo Hayes and John Cena just stood in the ring waiting. Yeah. It's very odd. Yeah, I don't understand this. They do it with WWE though. They'll have someone make their entrance and then they'll go to like a 4-minute commercial. So the rest is just stood in the ring the whole time. I've never had that happen to me, and I feel like I'd feel like a right Wally doing that. But if they want to pay me WWE money, then I'll do it. I'll keep my mouth shut and do it.
A commercial is one thing, and I understand what you're saying, but this was a story. I wouldn't even call it a storyline. I don't know what it was. It was a non sequitur, and the match had already started at that point. I'm thinking about Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes at this point. I'm already there. And then this random thing happened, and it reminded me of, you know, those jokes, how Family Guy format jokes, where they just do these cutaway segments just and they just take you out. That's what it was like. It was like watching Family Guy. Big miss for me. The opponent, Bron Breakker, enters, and the match is better than expected, but still wasn't amazing. They try and sell a story where Breakker struggles to handle stress and frustration levels, and it ultimately plays out like the tortoise and the hare maxim. Carmelo pins Breakker for the win. Having Cena and Heyman at ringside lends a credence to NXT that it perhaps hasn't earned, and despite the added star power, it didn't have the energy or gravitas of a main match of the night. That is, until Breakker, I think, spears Hayes and says he's the biggest badass, which causes The Undertaker to appear, riding to the ring on his massive motorcycle. However, the NXT venue is far too small for this to be majestic, and is like when people have a Tibetan Mastiff in a one-bedroom apartment. Breakker squares up to Undertaker and badmouths him, and cyclical storytelling comes into play as it parallels the start of the episode where he squared up to Cena. Hubris yet again gets in his way. He doesn't understand this is what caused him to lose his match, and Undertaker ties it all together by teaching him a much-needed lesson in humility with a thundering chokeslam. This would have been the perfect buttoner to close the show on, but then the commentator ruins it by incorrectly saying The Undertaker added Breakker to the list of people he made famous, when that phrase is reserved for people Taker throws off the Hell in a Cell. The show closes with Hayes smiling as the victor, and the crowd chanting for The Undertaker as he imparts wisdom in Breakker that there is always somebody bigger and badder waiting around the corner. And that was our final match. Marty, what did you think?
Beautiful. I watched AEW first, and then I watched NXT right away afterwards. So by this point, I was pretty damn checked out. I know Bron Breakker is really talented, probably be world heavyweight champion. Carmelo Hayes, he's great. He's someone that I was about to bring into Ring of Honor as I was a booker, you know, when I was booking just before the pandemic, but then that obviously ruined everything. So he's super talented. But yeah, I thought from what I can remember, it's thing is with like WWE, like nothing's ever really going to be super duper bad. It's always professional and everything else. Whether you're actually excited for it or not, that's a different story. Here, like I said, two good guys. The match was good. Felt like they used John Cena well here. And what was it? Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman.
And Undertaker. I can't get with Undertaker wearing sneakers. They're just, what? No, you know, what do you think of his t-shirt? I think it said old school, choke slam, tombstone, last ride. I was like, you can just have a t-shirt now that just lists your moves on. Okay, kind of cool.
Yeah, that's actually a popular... template for shirts, so I understand
what it seems going, so but no, I mean it's pretty cool to see The Undertaker in NXT, I guess, in such a little arena. But yeah, like I said, by this point I was kind of checked out of the show and I was ready to go play with Winston and have no more wrestling. But yeah, it was it was good. It was all right.
I think the star, well, I said the star power wasn't probably enough. I think from like a match perspective is what I meant. But I think when The Undertaker did come down and there's just the three of them, and I think The Undertaker did do a very good job at being the being exactly who he's supposed to be in that situation. Obviously, because he's such a professional. I just thought the whole thing was just like I said, a nice little bow.
Yeah.
For the Bron Breakker had an arc. Well, not really, because he didn't learn anything, but you get what I mean. And I was just saying, oh, well, Marty, you like your episodic storytelling and stuff. maybe there's some growth in there for Bron Breakker. I just felt like it left it on a very kind of decent note. It was just like a nice little bang.
Yeah.
I thought it was very good.
I thought so. Yeah. I thought it was, yeah, you're right. They tied it together really, really well.
I think so.
So that was NXT. Mm-hmm. We've done AEW. Sam, I told you leading up to this, don't look up the ratings for these shows.
Right.
So first of all, I'm going to ask you a few questions, but who do you think won the rating war, NXT or AEW?
So you gave a little clue. Well, you didn't really give a clue earlier, but you said for the longest time when they were on at the same, they were both on at a Wednesday for the first year, I think you said, AEW was winning out.
Yeah.
Past performance makes me want to say AEW. However, it was AEW who had to kind of make the switch from their regular slot to a different day. So if anybody's going to be hurting from that, I feel like they would be the ones that would kind of be screwed over on that. So this time I'm actually have no clue. And I'm just going to guess AEW, despite it not being the one that I liked as much.
Okay. So now I'm going to ask you to guess the rating. So just to give you some kind of insight, the last month of NXT, they've done 850, 824, 636, and 857. That's their last month. And AEW have done 888, 984, 855, and 800. So pretty similar, but the last month, AEW has done a little bit more than NXT. So with that being said, what rating do you think NXT got?
I feel like NXT, you said that they did advertise the star power.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Earlier. Yeah. Yeah. I think if there's obviously people who are going to be like, hey, I watch NXT on Tuesday. Oh, now there's two things on. I don't have time for this. I've got to go do that. So I'm going to have to make a sacrifice. I'm going to watch one over the other. I wanted to say that that would hurt NXT, but I think the star, I mean, I've watched it, for Christ's sakes. I know I had to for this, but I reckon actually the star power was more of a force in the other direction, and they might actually be slightly over. So you said they were averaging like
around 830 average last month.
830 yeah. Average. I'm gonna say about 850. Oh, that's a bit much. I'm gonna say 850.
And what do you think AEW got?
I don't think I think AEW was about I'm going to say they're even.
So you think both got 850?
I do.
Okay. So drum roll. Well, everyone knows the ratings now anyway. So basically,
From me.
Yeah. Basically NXT won the ratings war. So when you said about them, you know, AEW being moved time slot, you should have gone with that. I predicted the whole time. Like I was discussing with people and they're like, I think AEW is going to win. I was saying, NXT is going to win because AEW is not on the same time slot. And the only way you would know they're not on Wednesdays if you're online all the time. And like most not people aren't.
Yeah.
Not everyone is. So NXT did 921,000.
Oh, so that's, whoa. Good
rating for NXT.
Dude, quite a jump.
They had John Cena, Undertaker, Cody.
No, I understand.
Hayden. Right. So they had 921. AEW... 609.
Ooh,
yeah, it was quite a big,
quite a big victory,
quite a thrashing for NXT. And it was to be expected because of AEW's time slot, you know, and WWE threw everything at this. I asked the listeners of Chilling with the Villain which show they preferred. Which one do you think they preferred?
Oh, don't break my heart, guy. AEW. I bet because of all the questions where they're like, Marty, are you going to AEW?
So
come on, let's hear it. AEW.
They actually, well, it's pretty close. They technically preferred NXT. NXT got 56% of the votes and AEW got 44%. So
guys,
our audience enjoyed NXT more.
I'm
going to ask you and myself, I guess now, out of the two shows, the Tuesday Night War, we know who actually won the ratings, but which show did you prefer? Which show did you enjoy more?
I think I've already kind of hinted at which one I preferred more. I much preferred NXT.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I actually enjoy it. I want to watch it now.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, honestly, man. I thought it was really good fun.
I I can't, honestly, this is so annoying because genuinely I'm like in the middle. Like, I feel like I didn't really prefer either or show. I felt like they were both decent shows.
If you watched them in the other order, maybe you went and checked out one, what do you reckon? Do you reckon that would have been enough to sway you, or
possibly? I mean, the AEW had the best match with the Bryan and Swerve match. NXT,
that is true.
NXT maybe had some better sort of tying things in with storyline stuff. I also think it hurts NXT, like being in that small arena, that kind of takes me out of it a little bit, which is ironic because I've wrestled in so many small buildings in my life. I don't know. For me, honestly, I was like 50-50 on it. I thought they were both decent shows that both had some strong points, but also there was room for improvement. So I don't know if I could pick one. It wasn't like, I mean, I could just pick one for the sake of it, but it wasn't like one was and one was like really bad. That wasn't the case. Do you know what I mean? They were both like all right, decent shows.
Yeah. And just to be clear, we're talking about Tuesday's episode specifically.
Yes, not of course.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely fair. I think that's absolutely fair. And I don't think people would want to hear you just say one for the sake of it. Like, if that's your real feeling, that is how it worked for you. And that's just how it's going to be.
But is it concerning that they're on a level playing field and NXT is just their developmental brand? But actually, no, it's not, because this clearly wasn't just a developmental brand show. This had WWE superstars. Had
John
all over
Cena,
it.
For God's sake. It had fast X actor John Cena.
Well, guys, that was our review of both AEW Dynamite and NXT. A little bit different this week, not a classic wrestling review, but a wrestling review nonetheless. If you enjoyed this and us doing current wrestling, let us know. Maybe it's something that we'll do more regularly. Maybe it's something we'll do on the Patreon when the Patreon starts. But I really, really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Please make sure you're following us on the Instagram. It is popping off on the IG at The Villain Pod. And of course, you can find us under the same handle on YouTube and on TikTok. Yeah, don't stop. Sam, have I made you completely hate wrestling? Or it sounds like you're a fan now. Wearing NXT t-shirt and stuff.
Yeah, honestly, yes. No, I'm being serious. It was actually really good and I might start watching it. Just very, really, I really enjoyed myself.
Well, there
I'm
we go.
Watch more.
Well, we've made an NXT. He's chosen his side, Sam. Next, he'll be arguing with AEW stands online about which one is better. But
yes, I will.
But I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week. So I guess I'll hand it over to you, Sam, Mr. Yes. NXT.
Mr. NXT, King of the Tables, Mr. NXT. And obviously the only match that I didn't really want to talk about on NXT was the one with the tables in. It's just how it goes sometimes. But as always, have a good week. Till next week.